In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello and welcome to episode 81. Did anybody notice we didn't have a podcast last week?
I did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Let's see if we can make this one good enough for 2 weeks. Mark, I know that you're not able to record the call, so I'm recording, Rick's recording. Well, there we go. There's the three of us, me, Nigel, Rick, and Mark. Lauren's on a plane and Gabriel's in a meeting, but only two of us are recording. So, Mark, that tells me you're still with Windows 10, and you obviously don't have any Skype call recording software. Are you loving Windows 10?
I'm not loving Windows 10.
What?
No, I'm not loving it. I don't like the interface. I mean, a bunch of things have changed. You know, the file operations are just kind of weird. You know, for years and years, I've had, you know, this growing music collection on my machine, different, you know, formats and whatnot. And iTunes was basically managing it, which, of course, was really stupid. So I decided to fire iTunes and I've been working with other stuff and just, you know, moving things and syncing things and all that. And that's working with Windows 10. My sync program is working. But that, I don't know what the look of that interface is that they call Windows 10. I like the old look better.
Oh, man. I love it. I mean, I've said that before, so don't sound like a shill. Rick, have you done much with it?
No, but I'll save my good news for a second. I'm going to Windows 10 here in a bit. But, you know, Mark, you've got the music sorted, but I'm worried about digital pictures, all the metadata and, you know, trying to find that picture from 5 years ago. Now, I need an OS that can do that for me good.
And I have no idea if Windows 10 can do that. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it does, but I think they've sort of dumbed it down, right? And so, like, on file manipulation stuff, I know when I'm searching, I can do file searches and find things that way, but some directories come up, and it's just hard to look at. I have a harder time putting together my old list view of stuff. Windows 10 wants to give me other things, but some stuff gets hidden, too, right? So what was it? I was trying to – I downloaded something. I had to research why I couldn't open the file or do something with it, and I needed to turn on administrator mode. I couldn't do it. I needed administrator mode, so I had to go online and look up that there's a secret administrator account that you can use to get into stuff on Windows 10. I thought, this is bullshit, right? Freaking machine.
Hold on, Mark. Now, are you coming from Windows 8, or did you leap right from 7?
From 7.
Ah. That explains a lot, because if you have gone to Windows 8 and 8.1, which are, for many discussions, equivalent, that transition from 8 to 10 is a lot less than 7 to 10. And I think that that's a very important thing to note. Myself, I'm on 8 and loving it, but I think that if you were on 8, it would not be as hard of a transition. That administrative thing probably would happen regardless, though.
So yeah, it was like a zip. It was a zip tool I was trying to unpack, and it for some reason it wouldn't let me unpack it. Actually, the reason is that I downloaded a zip tool for Linux and not Windows by mistake, right? So, well, you know, you get in these big long scroll things, and it scrolled down and down. Yeah. I finally found the English language one, and I got it from the Windows Store. And I downloaded this thing, then tried to unpack it, and wouldn't let me unpack it. And I can't remember what else I did, but I ended up having to go into this secret administrator account that I knew nothing about. And it's like, geez, really? I can't even be the administrator of my own machine.
Well, there's also another thing happening with what I call built-in extensions, and I'll put PDF in there too, where native applications to the OS, and this is really what we had a couple years ago, kind of coming back in a way with the browser, where, dare I say, anti-competitive, but PDF is kind of funky nowadays too, because it's built into Windows and it's not entirely smooth. It's like you could download an Acrobat Reader, but if it's in like the full screen mode, PDF isn't exactly awesome. So what you're having with ZIP, I've had with PDF. So it's partly a shift in the industry.
Now I'm kind of remembering what the sequence was. I was trying to get Firefox up to 64-bit, and I downloaded the Linux version instead of the Windows version.
But
it didn't work, damn it!
I've just had a thought, though, Mark. You know what? Microsoft are like, they're totally embracing Linux and stuff these days, aren't they? I mean, there was just in the news the other week that they're going to be supporting Bash on Windows 10. I'm just thinking, you're so forward thinking here. that you're expecting all these Linux apps to be working on Windows, and we're just not there yet. You know, maybe we come back in 2 or 3 years' time, and
right,
it'll be like,
right, I want Firefox for Linux running on Windows.
And why not? Farley's ahead of the curve. Maybe that's what we're going to expect. Yeah.
So the other thing I did, which was kind of interesting, is I checked out Groove Music, the new music app for it. That. And it's not that great. You know, it would be really cool if I could manage my iPod with it and that sort of stuff. And I don't even know why I need an iPod anymore, you know, because you can put everything on your phone, and I've got a Amazon Fire, you know, Kindle Fire. I can put SD cards and all of these devices that have all my music on it. But for some reason, the curmudgeon in me just wants to have music on a freaking iPod. You know, an iPod Classic, not a phone, nothing like that.
Yeah, it does not have a disk drive in it, that one.
It does. It has a disk drive, and the freaking thing still works.
Yeah. Hey, Rick, if you're thinking about moving to Windows 10 as well, who's going to do our backup podcast recordings then?
I will get it sorted. Don't worry.
Is that right? Good luck with that.
So, but I do have some good luck and good news, guys.
What are you doing, Nigel? You got Windows 10.
I do, yeah, but you know how flaky mine is? Like, probably one out of every three doesn't record, or it says it's recording, and then it just spends like 6 hours trying to save the file, and there's nothing there.
That's not encouraging.
No, it's not.
I use Avar, just saying, EVAER.
Yeah, actually, I do want to try that one, yeah.
I paid for it. By the way, the free edition is only 5 minutes, and that you initially did that, and you're like, oh, that's dodgy, I'm out. But
no, no.
I paid for it.
Are you cheap like me, Nigel?
No.
As cheap as I am?
I did that with Ava. But also, the one I've got now, Aftec Skype Recorder, I've paid for that. But I also paid for PowerGramo before. And I'm starting to get a little bit ticked because with PowerGramo, when that first stopped working, I raised a ticket with them. Never heard back. Of course, I'd paid for it like 6 months ago, and they don't care anymore, do they? So I had to switch. And I've paid for a license for Aftec Skype Recorder as well. And you know what? It's flaky. So if this Ava, whatever it's called, does turn out to be pretty stable on Windows 10, I don't mind paying for it, to be honest.
Just
to save the hassle of, you know, it's a pain in the backside, isn't it, when we record a podcast?
It is. But you got to remember, one big thing Avar doesn't do is separate channels, like a record of... Okay, I got good news, guys. April 1st, just 13 days ago, I got an email. I've achieved something I've been working on for years. Microsoft MVP, the Rickatron.
Oh, I saw that.
Hey, Rickatron.
I gave up. I'm serious, guys. But the best news, I could finally get Windows 10 upgrade for free with the MSDN privilege.
Oh, you are cheaper than us.
I am very cheap.
That's right.
You are so cheap that you would get a Microsoft MVP so you don't have to buy it.
Yeah, that's right.
Because weren't you on some funny version of 8.1 that wouldn't let you upgrade to the retail version?
Yes, N, which is what came from back in the day, the old TechNet subscription.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Maybe not for retail or... Not, you know, some sort of special, you know, and they say,
yeah, the N stood for never.
N stand for, you know, not you. Yeah, so I hit that, and I've been working on that for 3 years, guys. So, and
Drop a score for you there.
I'm
well
serious.
Done.
I gave up. I literally gave up. I wasn't going to, like, start hating on Big Blue or Microsoft, as it were, but I was like, well, I'll just stop that track. But I was really happy that I got that.
So one thing I've noticed with my Windows 10 installation is that it definitely doesn't perform as well as my Windows 7 did. Really, with respect to browser stuff, I'll have, you know, like 50 tabs open at the same time or something like that, right? And it just bogs down. Now I'm trying to use Firefox. I'm trying, you know, I'm not using whatever View. What do they call that thing?
Anyway? I don't even know now.
I know it's
not Cortana.
No, the new browser.
Yeah,
Edge is called
Edge. Yeah. So Edge performs okay, but Firefox does not, which is why I upgraded to 64-bit, right? But and Firefox, of course, was complaining about things that Microsoft was doing to make it non-competitive. Mm. And I think there might be something to it. It was running better on 7 than on 10.
Hey, Mark, is it a modern laptop that you've got?
No, I use a little desk machine.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, Windows 7 is several years ago now. And I don't know, not that this is a great thing, but it does seem that any time there's a new release of software, you probably need to have a more powerful machine, don't you? Which kind of keeps the market going and all that jazz. But I don't know, maybe you're expecting too much. Not that I'm not trying to defend Windows 10.
Well, but flip it around. I can put an SSD on a 10-year-old laptop and life is good. So do you have an SSD, Mark?
No.
Well, then you're totally doomed.
Hey, so I've got a quick correction from a podcast a couple of weeks ago. So I gave a shout out to a trilogy of books I'd read, The Fear Saga. Brilliant, brilliant sci-fi books, right? But I said that the author was a guy called Stephen Baxter. The author is a guy called Stephen Moss. But anyway, if any of our listeners are into sci-fi books and what have you, could not recommend higher The Fear Saga. And in fact, I recommended it to Enrico Signoretti, and he just pinged me on Twitter earlier this week saying, man, thank you so much for introducing me to those books. So he's loving them. I reckon if you're a techie person and you're into your sci-fi books, you'd love it. The Fear Saga, Stephen Moss. There you go. Shall I run through the news and then we'll crack on with it, yeah?
Well, there's just one other thing I want to talk about. I got a piece of feedback on Twitter.
Oh.
And I'm not going to name names or talk about who it was, but somebody that works for a company that we've spoken about sometime in the past. Listen to the podcast.
Does this mean it's bad?
They were actually pretty polite, but sort of not. And I mean, mostly polite, right? It came through a DM and all that. And so, you know, they were saying you talked about, you know, their company, and they sort of asked me to dig a little deeper before we talk about it because, you know, they thought I didn't get it right, you know, and they want to be accurate. And I just want to say that, you know, this show, as much as anything, is about opinions.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I did is I sent a DM back and I said, you know, educate me, tell me what's going on. And then I didn't hear anything back. And it was at that point that I was a little miffed, right? I don't mind somebody coming and saying, hey, why don't you do your homework? That's fine. I mean, we get that stuff. And believe me, you're not the first person to do this, you know, because other people from other companies, they'll tag me and they'll say, hey, look at this and whatnot. And that's all good. But if you're going to come and suggest that we do something, you know, then follow up. That's all.
Yeah.
If you want us to be educated, then educate us.
Absolutely.
We're not here to represent vendors.
And we're not here to get deep into things either, are we? We're kind of trying to skim the surface, distill what our opinions are on certain things. And you know, I certainly know that when I'm out in quote unquote the field and people talk to me about the podcast, that is exactly what they're after. And to be fair, you know, I'll say one criticism that people have given us is that when we're talking and giving our opinions, we tend to kind of coalesce on the same opinion too often. And some people would like a little bit more disagreement and what have you. But they're adamant that it's the opinions that they want at the end of the day.
Well, that first opinion is so valuable, right? That first, like, that knee-jerk reaction. And really, us, this group of five people, we all have these knee-jerk reactions. Should we all be on a show or not? That's another discussion. But that is very valuable because that – first impression is so much of a gut check real, like, just okay, it's let's go down that route, let's have a conversation with something. And that's, I get a lot out of that, especially when we talk about things I don't know about.
Yeah. So, you know, so we're gonna miss, we're gonna make mistakes, and some of the times though we're gonna be spot on, you
know? The thing is as well, you know what, when we do miss or when people think that we miss, let's have it out in the open on Twitter or on the LinkedIn group or something like that. Educate us that way. And that way that it's out in the open and other people can get involved. And I don't know, it's a way to generate discussions. Let's run through the news that we've got for the week. So I've got a couple of items in tech news and then a bit of business news. So OpenStack, the latest release, I think Mitaka, now offering native backup to the Google Cloud. So I think this is pretty cool because it's yet another positive mood for, I don't know whether it's right to call it the resurgent Google Cloud, but we seem to have talked about it a lot recently since Diane kind of took over there. So not in and of itself a massive thing for the Google Cloud, I don't think, nor for OpenStack, but yet another thing in that kind of, I don't know whether this is my opinion, right, but OpenStack and the Google Cloud platform both seem to be snowballing and picking up a bit of momentum at the moment. So that's one item. Another bit of good news in the OpenStack space, Volkswagen, they see OpenStack as important and they've chosen Mirantis over Red Hat for their planned OpenStack rollout. Zadara, purveyor of enterprise storage in the cloud and on-prem as well, they've announced an object store and they're bringing Fibre Channel to their products. Interesting. Business news, Nutanix IPO, apparently it's back on. I don't know whether they're getting short on cash or what. But anyway, if they did IPO, as things stand, they'd only be the second IPO of 2016. On that note, don't know whether this is particularly newsworthy, but I'm wondering whether we think the venture capital funding has peaked, or whether it's now on the decline. Apparently 2015 is the highest year so far for VC funding, with no less than $59 billion being given out. And then a couple of things around EMC and Dell, right? So apparently EMC are looking to sell off Documentum, and there's rumors that Dell is reported to be seeking buyers for SonicWall and Quest. So it looks like they're trying to sell off and raise capital and reduce debt burden and stuff like that for the whole deal, which I guess we think is still going ahead. Because there's the last item that we may want to talk about is there have been one or two things leaked about what the company might look like after the merger goes ahead. So that's what we've got. The OpenStack native backup to the Google Cloud, am I on the ball there, do we think, or is that like a nothing thing?
I think it's a thing. I like the fact that it's basically a driver. As you know, many people know, I'm in this industry, backup in particular. And the fact that it's a driver that can go into, quote, various storage platforms, I love that idea. You know, the let's bring back the B drive. And I'm not talking about 5 1/4-inch floppy. I'm talking about your backups, baby. I think that's awesome. And then the target is Cinder. I'll be honest with you. People want object storage for backups. They want it, period. So a way to make that easy, hey, man, I'm all for it, whether it be storage devices, OSs, apps. I think that that framework as a driver or API or whatever way it would implement to translate, because not everything can natively talk object storage in the case of Cinder. But I think that that is that's very compelling.
You know, it's just more endorsement of OpenStack by Google.
I guess as well, on the positive side for Google, if they do have all of these hooks in and out of OpenStack, as OpenStack starts to ramp within enterprises and, you know, the on-prem IT world, then it's potentially a good route onto Google's public cloud for when you want to burst and things like that. Because I think, and shout me down here, right, but I think most organizations are coming to the point where they kind of appreciate that, okay, your on-premises infrastructure, if you can run it like to the wall, like 75, 80, 90, 95% utilization, it's going to be cheaper than the public cloud. But then for your bursty workloads and for test dev and, you know, trying out new things, then the public cloud is great. As companies come around to that kind of a mindset, then the ability to, you know, shift workloads and move data and things around, it's going to become more and more important. And therefore, I think, you know, we all appreciate that Google is still probably trying to find its niche. But if it's got, you know, good hooks into OpenStack and OpenStack does really take off in the enterprise, maybe it's a bit of a kickstarter for Google as well and getting their claws into the enterprise. And certainly, you know, we would think that they'd have more of an enterprise focus and bring more to the game for enterprises with Diane at the helm and, you know, all of her past history with VMware and the likes.
Yeah, and choosing backup as an app is a really good one. It's sticky. Once people start backing up there, they'll probably continue to use it, want to explore it, you know, more services. So it's a good move for Google.
Cool. Now, just to be clear as well, Cinder does back up to other object-based targets, right? And so it's not just Google Cloud here, but the fact that I'm pretty sure, actually, I could really embarrass myself here, but, you know, the likes of Amazon and what have you don't really seem to play so well with OpenStack. See it as a competitor, really. Please, listeners, shout me out if you really think I'm wrong there. But if Google go along a different route of maybe embracing OpenStack rather than seeing it as a competitor, but as a potential on-ramp and a potential ecosystem play, don't know, different angle might be a good move for them. Yeah.
And wouldn't that be an interesting thing if the industry evolves to the point where Google and OpenStack are lined up in one way or another against Amazon? Why would Amazon let that happen? And if they do, what does it mean?
And Azure. I mean, you know, there's three of them right there in the middle. And Amazon's always been this one in the middle where it's part cloud stack, part hybrid cloud. Azure's been this, you know, modern apps, hybrid cloud, and Google's been totally cloud stack. So this is a very interesting move.
Yeah, Google needs something to help it get into the enterprise, to help it get into the on-prem world, right? I think Microsoft's in a great place, right? They've got, you know, they've got so much stuff already on-prem and with the enterprises, and they've got a pretty solid cloud, so pretty balanced story there. Amazon Web Services, great public cloud story, pretty naff when it comes to on-prem and the enterprise, right? It's just not their thing, and it hasn't been Google's thing either, but I think it really needs to be, because they don't seem to be competing so well with Amazon Web Services.
They need their own path to success. If they try to copy Amazon, they're just always going to be behind. They have to do something different.
Yeah, and there's lots of things been in the news recently about them, wins with different companies and customers and what have you, now integrations with other technologies like OpenStack. I'm starting to think there's a potentially good story brewing there. Oh, yeah, so sticking with OpenStack as well, Volkswagen chooses Mirantis over Red Hat. Now, we did talk about Red Hat, I think, on the last show. Bit of a poster child for open source, done their first $2 billion year in revenue, looking at about $2.4, $2.5 billion, I think, for next year. So they're going well, but they lost out to Mirantis. Volkswagen, big company, okay. This is a big deployment, if what I've read in the press is to be taken at face value, right? Do we think that it's a bit of a punt, them going with somebody like Mirantis?
I don't understand what you mean by punt.
The going with the off-brand.
Yeah, going with off-brand with a startup, is it a risk? Or is that like an old-fashioned view that I've got there?
Well, I personally think that Volkswagen, a German influence company, is not going to make a decision without completely thinking it through. And having worked with a lot of Germans, this is a fact, I can tell you for sure.
Okay, so this is what then? This is a ringing endorsement potentially of Mirantis then?
Absolutely. They've Volkswagen have thought this through. They might have money, but they're just not going to, on a whim, oh, okay, well, let's skip the big household name and go with who? They're not going to do that.
Okay.
What it sounded like in what I read is that, you know, they did a head-to-head competition in the two companies' capabilities on, you know, some set of test suites or evaluation that Volkswagen was doing, and they determined based on that they would go to Mirantis. Now, the skeptic in me says there has to be a cost component of this also. But Volkswagen, at the same time, I don't think that they would necessarily just say, hey, let's go for Mirantis because it's a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. Because I think they are, you know, it is a large global organization. They really can't afford to screw up. I don't think it would be that driven by economics here. I think it's more driven by something they saw in execution and competency.
Well, the head-to-head part that you mentioned, Mark, that's critical. You would be surprised, especially for software, how rare a head-to-head competition actually happens in the enterprise. And I can tell you, there are some enterprise software brands that actually won't even do it. They will have to sell you vaporware. You know, you have to take the promise and, you know, go with it.
Which is ridiculous.
I know.
Come on.
It's software. I'm just saying, there are some brands that don't make that easy. So the fact that Volkswagen...
Like Oracle?
Volkswagen have done that. That's the best indicator. It's one of those things, don't take the vendor's advice. Take your own advice, because you've done the homework.
And you can't trust the vendors. That's what you're saying under the hood there, Rick, really.
Hey, I'm all about the, you know, the Pepsi challenge, the backup software challenge, the cloud stack challenge. Take it, man.
I'm really glad you brought that up about the bake-off, right? Because from what I read, it sounded like it was really intense, yeah? I got the impression from what I read around it was that this was, like, critical to the decision, right? And there was something like 60-plus tests that they threw at both companies, wasn't there? And they had to work their own way through them and fix them and resolve them and come up with solutions, and then had to give extensive reports back to Volkswagen as to how they dealt with the problems, what solutions they came up with and the likes. And I think each company, so Red Hat and Mirantis, both had 2 weeks to work on the problems and then had a week to present their results to Volkswagen. You know, if we're saying... Are Volkswagen taking a risk with Mirantis, or is this a ringing endorsement? I mean, they've chosen them certainly on technical merit and no doubt a balance of commercials as well. This is not something that they've just chosen on a whim. So the fact that Mirantis have come out of this good probably is a ringing endorsement.
From Mirantis' perspective, I think this is a must-win deal. This is their business. This is their only business.
Yeah.
It's not Red Hat's only business.
No.
Right? If Red Hat can come in and beat them on a deal like this, then what does that say about Mirantis that's specializing in OpenStack deployments? hats off to them for pulling it through. My guess is it was an all-hands-on-deck operation at Mirantis to pull this deal in.
They were hungry for it. They wanted it. They got it. They made the proof of concept go. And then the other half, man, hey, how about Volkswagen? Good for them to put the criteria on their terms, right? Because no vendor is going to like make the sale go that way, right? This is very much Volkswagen's terms. Maybe they should be analysts and start writing their own quadrants and stuff.
They should be podcasters. Let's get them on.
Yeah. In tech news, Zadara as well. Do either of you guys know Zadara?
A little bit, just barely.
Yeah. So I had a chat with them during the week, or maybe it was last week. Can't even remember now. Again, I mention it because a little bit similar to the OpenStack and Google thing here. These guys have like some kind of software-defined storage, right, that you can run either in Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, or on-premises. And I wonder if we're going to see more and more startups and new companies coming along that have software solutions that will run on-prem and in the cloud. Because I do think that the vast majority of companies are going to end up with this like healthy balance of private and public cloud, call it hybrid cloud if we want to maybe, but technologies that allow you to replicate from one to the other and move workloads from one to the other and the likes, I don't know, they just, to me, seem like they're going to be really, really important going forward. So they've brought an object store solution to market, or they've announced one, they're going to bring it, and they're bringing Fibre Channel as well. Not really so much interested in their announcements, just thought it was interesting to maybe mention that companies like that and technologies like that, maybe there's something to keep an eye on in the future. You know, back in the day, it was always, at least in the storage space, right, it was Site Recovery Manager, and it was replication technologies that let you replicate between two or three data centers, yeah. Now it's between clouds, I think, really, isn't it? That's like the hot thing going forward.
I think it's worth watching because some of the people involved. Nelson Nahum is a guy that I knew from many years ago. He was the CEO, or at least the CTO at StoreAge, which had an interesting out-of-band virtualization product for SANs. And that technology direction didn't catch on, but they solved some interesting access problems around Fibre Channel in a very creative way. So he's a smart guy. He understands storage. I mean, it's not surprising that they do Fibre Channel just because he knows it really well. And my guess is his core team knows Fibre Channel, so it probably wasn't that big a deal. It was probably something that had always been in the roadmap at Zadara for some time. So obviously they see the need to do object store. And if you can do object storage on premises and have it hooked to cloud storage, that might be a really interesting thing. I just happen to think that Nelson is one of those guys, one of those old school storage guys with very deep knowledge about how storage works and about how corporations access and use data. And so I definitely think they have a shot, right? I think it's a long shot because of who they're up against, and you know they have to partner with companies like Amazon, a company that likes to eat partners for breakfast. Right. But
second
Nelson
only to Oracle is in Dancing with the Devil.
Yeah. But I just want to say Nelson is a very smart and very clever guy. And I believe that the technology solutions that they make will work. His stuff has always worked. And I don't think this will be any different.
Fair play. Hey, something interesting that did come out of the discussion that I had with them on the topic of Fibre Channel. They did say the majority of requests for Fibre Channel that they get are from Europe and Asia, and they don't have so much demand from the US market. Now, is that suggesting that over here in Europe and Asia and the rest of the world, are we more conservative? Are we more behind? Or is there probably nothing to that? Do you have anybody have any thoughts on that?
Reality check. How big is their sample?
Bingo, Rick. Keep going with that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got 28 customers, you can make those types of wow. I don't know their numbers, okay, to be fair to Zadara.
Sure, yeah.
My concern is they are trying to do a lot of different things, okay? But if you have a small sample, you can make what could perceivably be shocking observations, but oh, by the way, we don't have a sales team in North America. Maybe that type of thing
goes
with it.
I think they do.
I'm just saying.
They do have a sales team here, but my guess is they probably have more going on in Europe and Asia right now than they do here. That's
or
my guess.
Flip it around. They've got one ringer of a salesperson over in Europe. You know,
yeah.
And
maybe.
You know, I'm just saying, let's just look at the sample because I've seen numbers kind of it's like a Mexican menu, right? There's only beans, rice, and cheese and meat, right? But how you redistribute it, it goes from a taco to a burrito to an enchilada to a chalupa. You know, there's so many different
ways. Check you out, Rick.
Yeah, woo-hoo. Look at that.
Tell you what, so items under business news, right? The Nutanix IPO.
I was just going to say I wanted a crepe. After all that, I just wanted a crepe.
Yeah. The Nutanix IPO, is it on again? Do they need to IPO? Does anybody have any thoughts on this? Do we think they're short on cash? Would it be a good thing for them to IPO at the moment? I don't know, the market seems to be not great for tech IPOs. I mean, we've covered this one to death in the past, I know. I do wonder whether they need more cash. And looking at the recent tech IPOs that have happened, I wouldn't be expecting fireworks.
I think that they have to be smart about timing this, and they're maybe trying to look forward into another worldwide recession in 2017, something like that, right? And if that happens and the IPO market dries up, then they really might be in trouble. Maybe it makes sense. Even though there's not much of a market today, it might be better than a bad case. I wouldn't say even worst case. I would just say bad case. And maybe they just decided, you know what, we need to do this now.
If VC money is drying up as well, IPO while you can, I guess.
Yeah, the VC money might be drying up and, of course, is becoming more expensive and they're in their D round or E round, whatever it is already.
I've got some numbers here, right? So they've raised $312 million to date. Now, one of the things that was cited is, you know, why the IPO might be back on track was they've gone from $101 million in revenue, I believe it's revenue, from $101 million to $190 million in the 6 months leading up to January 31st. So almost doubling revenue, not far off, right? Almost doubling it. So on the, you know, if that is the case, on the back of that positive outlook for the business and positive trend.
Yeah. No, I think they're at operations wise at about the break even level right now. I remember reading this, you know, last week or whatever. Expenses exceeded revenue by about $10 million, and now they're both coming in at about the same, right? So those things are a little bit in line. If they can continue to raise revenues and keep expenses in check, well, then, you know, it's a profitable company. Right. And if you can get there, then the question is, why do you need to borrow money? And I think the answer is, well, what if this trend doesn't continue? What if we have problems with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, a couple observations here. Nutanix has always been, with all due credit, an absolute master of really building fandom, you know, very aggressive in marketing and all that. I wouldn't doubt if that same strategy is somewhat showing itself here. Think of a very broad campaign to kind of get momentum going into the actual IPO. I think that, you know, updating the S1 form, getting the numbers looking more attractive and such, I think these are all calculated moves to when it actually happens. And put aside the whole industry challenge of VC money, which my personal opinion is that in right about a year, it'll start to go the other direction and open up. I'm literally always latched onto the U.S. presidential election. There's a little bit of a quiet for, you know, okay, the world's okay, let's carry on. It always does that. All markets in the U.S. especially, they go down and then they calculate their growth and then they come back down and they go back up and it's on an 8-year track. But I personally think Nutanix is absolutely controlling this. I don't want to say treating it like a marketing campaign, but think of it like a campaign, like a political campaign to bolster support for the IPO. I think that's where they're going with it.
Interesting thought. That might be a good shout. All right, then. So just the Dell EMC stuff really to mop up before we go into a super special hot or not, which we'll mention later. So EMC apparently wanting to get rid of Documentum. I think it was like $3 billion they paid for them a while ago. Anyway, they're looking to potentially offload Documentum. Rumors that Dell are looking to sell SonicWall and Quest. I mean, it doesn't feel like that long ago since Dell acquired Quest. But is this like, are they really trying to shave off all the fat here before it goes through? Yeah, is that what's going on?
Well, let me clarify something here with... And I'm going to speak a little bit to my own responsibilities here, what I do professionally. But, you know, one of the big things that came with Quest were two or three backup products. Okay, so that got rolled into Dell software. EMC's not letting Avamar go anywhere at all. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay.
That's a really good point, Rick. If there are mainstream products in the Quest portfolio that are going to compete with EMC software, there was probably a decision made to jettison the Quest stuff just to make room for the EMC product.
And also look at the segmentation, especially Avamar and Networker, very enterprise side for the backup product, right? Again, this is what I deal with every day. But then you look at Apashure, VRanger, Backbone, those are three that came from the Quest acquisition. They're not far to the right on that enterprise side. So they're making a decision for the market they really want to latch onto, in my opinion.
And I'm going to make a broad generalization here, but it seems like there's obviously going to be a heavy focus on that enterprise side of things as well, doesn't there?
Yeah, I think they broke it up into three business groups, you know, an enterprise group, a commercial group, which is basically small to medium-sized business, and consumer, and they say consumer small business, but I really think they mean consumer.
Mm-hmm.
What'll be interesting is how they do their, you know, hyper-converged solutions, you know, and, you know, there's been talk about how, you know, this new relationship, you know, being owned by Dell shouldn't change the VCE thing at all, but I just don't see that as being true. The VCE relationship where Cisco provides servers to that solution has to change. Dell wants that business. They need that business. I don't see that continuing, even though that's one thing that they say will continue to be the same. But who knows? I've been wrong about this stuff before. And, you know, EMC bought VMware, and VMware continued to work with all EMC's competitors. So maybe there's room for Dell and EMC to sell Cisco servers as part of a VCE solution.
Oh,
I just don't believe
it. Interesting.
Well, that would feel a little dirty.
Hey, you know, in the EMC portfolio, there's always been like, well, it feels to me like a ton of overlap, competing products, some EMC core products competing with VMware products and things like that. And I'm just thinking of the storage space right now. I mean, Dell has its own offerings that acquired, not Exalogic, Equalogic and Compellent and what have you in the past. What's going to happen to those as they go forward? I mean, you couldn't spin those out, could you? I can't see anybody wanting to buy the likes of those. But even then, within like, don't they say quite often that it seems there's overlap between Scale.io and Extreme.io? And I don't know, it seems like if you're going to have to start really shaving the fat off there, there's potentially a lot that could go. As in, well, I don't know. I mean, they could go as in not have to have the operational overheads and things, but I don't know who would buy a bunch of those.
Take Equalogic and VNX. In my feeble mind, well, just on from the let's just say mid-size and down, I think that Equalogic and VNX are really aligned by the customer size, the profile.
Yeah.
One of those, I would think, are they both going to make it? Is that that's a question I have. And then Upwork.
I can't see it. But who would pick them up? Lenovo?
But there's a huge customer base for those, you know. But the real question is, which product is right now innovating? That's the question, which I think will dictate the answer.
I don't think it's VNX, okay? But tell you what, they've got a lot more VNX customers than Dell will have Ecologic and Compellent combined, I would say.
You think?
I would have thought so, yeah. VNX.
I got to defer to Mark on that because my gut check reaction is to disagree on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. The business volumes might be the same, or EMC might have larger business volumes, but my guess is the actual customer count is probably greater on the Dell side. When I say business volumes, I mean revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you could you could also say customers with number of units or number of units at a customer. So it's like, I'd say Equalogic, a lot of people, you know, there's a large number of customers with one or two Equalogics, but then you have, on the VNX side, you might have a large number of customers or a small number of customers with a large number of VNXs. Okay, so you have those types of things going on too, but
I'm not sure how much headroom there is in that Equalogic product at Dell anyway anymore. I think the strategy there has been to try to move, you know, those customers onto Compellent products. You know, I think Compellent sort of won the wars internally there about, you know, who's running what, but, you know, everything gets screwed up inside Dell. So, I mean, it's just that there's not that much of that Equalogic team left.
Yeah, even the E is crooked on it.
Yeah, funny. So I just didn't think that the Equalogic technology had that much more development room. It seemed to me like it was probably on maintenance engineering as opposed to development engineering.
Right. Yeah.
I can see that going away. But they need to come up with an upgrade path. I don't see them selling any of that technology to someone that could compete head to head with them and then impact that business, that core business. I think they would rather take that, close it down, and continue to work with them than to give, you know, NetApp or Lenovo or anybody else, you know, hey, here's our install base.
Do you not think if Lenovo came along and offered a decent amount of cash based on the fact that they're, you know, it's not right for me to say they're having a hard time raising the cash here, right? But things are going to be tight, I would imagine, for a little while at Dell after this whole thing goes through. Would they not take that as like a short-term, okay, this gives us breathing space? Don't massively see Lenovo as major competition. And also in that space as well, I mean, what is the future for that when you look at cloud and stuff like that? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm waffling.
Well, Lenovo's, well, you know, carry that line the other way, Nigel. Didn't Lenovo pick up iOmega from EMC?
Did they? I missed that then.
I believe they did a couple years ago because the iOmega, their, you know, small micro SMB unified storage, EMC had acquired them, and then I believe iOmega picked them up. So that line might be a little bit more open than you would think.
Okay, maybe. Well, on that note, even though she's not been on the show, over to you, Lauren, for a very special Hot or Not. I believe you've got a crazy gang and a load of crazy ideas going on. So we will wind the show out. Lauren taking the lead with Hot or Not.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to In Tech We Trust's Hot or Not series. As you know, we probably had some issues getting together this week and some other technical difficulties. So I decided to engage some of our listeners to see what they would think about something being hot or not. So let's do a quick round of intros, guys. Just, you know, briefly who you are and your Twitter handle, maybe. Let's start with Melissa Gurney.
Hi, I'm Melissa Gurney. I work for EMC. My Twitter handle is SolutionGeek. And I'm the primary storage functional lead for the Americas, so an SE leader.
Awesome. And Keith Townsend.
I'm Keith Townsend. I'm at I'm at CTO Advisor on Twitter, formerly the Virtualized Geek.
Very cool. Brett, how about you?
G'day, I'm Brett Johnson. Brett Johnson 008 on Twitter. Fairly stock standard SIMS engineer, covering a few different stacks.
And last but certainly not least, our friend Josh Atwell.
Hi, I'm Josh Atwell. I'm a developer advocate at SolidFire, now a part of NetApp. You can find me on Twitter at Josh_Atwell, and I'm a ginger with a beard, so I'm totally hot.
I'll edit that.
I'll be the judge of that.
All right, guys. So our topic today is the new Tesla, the new $35,000 Tesla, which is apparently the cheap version, or inexpensive, I should say. So let's go around the room. We'll start again with Melissa. Melissa, hot or not?
It's pretty hot in my house right now. We actually just had a car that got totaled, and my husband will not lay off me about this Tesla. I'd much rather have any other car, but unfortunately, hotness.
Now, it's pre-order right now, right, guys? You put $1,000 down and you might get it in like a year or two?
Two years.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. All right, so hot for Melissa. Josh, what do you think?
Oh, I think it has the opportunity to be hot, but I think that it's really an indication that there is a strong desire or interest, and also that our economy supports hundreds of thousands of people able to do without $1,000 for a period of time. So, I think what they're doing is hot. I'm not sure if the $35,000 Tesla Model 3 is actually hot yet or not. I think it's popular, but I don't, you know, I think until they start rolling them out and see how quickly they can meet demand, I think it's lukewarm.
All right, lukewarm. Keith, what are your thoughts? I think I know what you're going to say here.
So, surprisingly, in the contrary to our pre-recording banter, The $35,000 Tesla Model 3 is about $3,000 more than my used Mercedes C300, which uses gas at $3, a little bit less than $3 a gallon right now. And I drive over 125 miles a day. So for me, and I'm in Chicago.
Dang.
So for me, it's not so hot. But obviously, a lot of people have a grand to spend on something that they probably won't get for another 4 or 5 years.
Now, yeah, good point. So how far can the Tesla go? Have they released that information?
I think it was 250.
Yeah, that sounds about in the ballpark.
Yeah, and that was just the baseline model. I know the I think they had released like there was going to be a minimum range of the number 150 pops in mind, but I don't know what it was. It felt like it was just a little under 200, but the anticipation is that the average Model 3 is going to be in the 250 range.
So, Keith, you'd be screwed if you couldn't get a charge in the middle of the day there.
And then I can't even remember to charge up my phone, so I got the bigger iPhone. So I don't.
Which uses the same amount of electricity.
Yeah, it would use about the same amount. I think the battery is about the same size. So,
in other words, the reminder car would never make it through.
I think there is a low power mode though, right? So I can
what, for the car?
Yeah.
It turns called grandmother mode.
It turns a 15-inch display.
Yeah, it's the driving Miss Daisy mode.
You can only go 15 miles per hour. Speaking of that,
if the low power mode though disables the 15-inch display, I mean, surely you'd want that just to have a standby mode anyway, just to increase range if it's going to draw that much juice.
Right.
Well, I couldn't imagine they could do that though.
Brett, so speaking of, what do you think, hot or not?
The concept is quite cool. I mean, we're looking at, I think, around 60,000 in Australia for it, which is, you know, getting quite up there in terms of our car prices. I don't know how 35 is for you guys, but with the delays and also the sparseness of the superchargers and stuff that are going to be in Australia, it's going to appeal to a few people, like, you know, mainly commuters around dense areas. But for analysis, anywhere halfway rural, we've got too much distance between point A and point B. So, yeah.
You don't see them putting charging stations in the bush?
I find it hard.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That would be funny.
Yeah, there's but you can get electricity for your Tesla Model 3.
Hey, look, you know, charge your car, feed some roos. Should be right.
There you go. Now, I'll tell you what is hot about this, though. And, you know, if you look at what Elon Musk has said from the beginning about Tesla not necessarily trying to own and dominate the electric car market, he wants just to speed up the pace of, you know, the adoption and implementation of electric cars, you know, he demonstrated very, very quickly with the pre-order of the Model 3 that there is a very high demand for a high-quality, reasonably priced electric vehicle. And that is something that, you know, you can't – you know, people voted with dollars, right? Market research is one thing. When people put money up for something that they really, really want and they're willing to put money up for it, that's hot.
You know, and I wonder what the other vendors will end up doing in this space. 325,000 cars is an awful lot of cars based on what they can build. I wonder if they're going to end up taking a fab type model where they end up outsourcing the building of that to a GM, Ford, Toyota, or
I couldn't imagine them doing that. I mean, they've got that massive Toyota factory. You know, it's just a matter of getting everything, you know, the manufacturing process up. You know, nobody's going to be able to pick up the same process that Tesla has in their factories because Tesla does everything completely different than anyone else.
Mm.
With what you said, Josh, about Tesla not wanting to sort of dominate as they're the main brand, it sort of made me think of one thing just generically for the electric cars is all you see with Tesla supercharge stations, I think eventually they're going to have to become fairly generic instead of just a Tesla charge. You know, it might need to support your other electric cars out there for the whole concept to become viable.
Yeah, bring your own adapter. I mean, you're gonna see that stuff kind of amalgam over time, and you know, as certain standards are going to come in place, we already see a little bit of that. So I think that's going to shake itself out as we get critical mass of those roads on the those vehicles on the road.
Mm. Very true.
Well, so I guess what I have to end with is. whether I think it's hot or not. And personally for me, I could not care less about this Tesla.
What? Like, you didn't get one to match your welt?
Well, that we didn't. They haven't talked about that integration yet. So if they do in fact match the well and, you know, a Fitbit and some sort of iWatch, then maybe I would consider it.
Well,
then.
What if they had an AI talking robot that they gave you put in the passenger seat, and the car and the robot could have a conversation? Then will it?
Well, make it you? Depends. Is it a racist, homophobic, xenophobic bot? If so, absolutely.
I'd love that though. You're driving by yourself, the car and your welt having a chat, and you've just become a third wheel in your own vehicle.
Yeah, it's somebody cuts you off and the auto drive portion of the Tesla just starts like shouting out obscenities to the other vehicle. Like the AI is now looking at us like we're not necessary. I think there's been movies about that.
If it auto learns my patterns for swearing at people when they cut me off, we're in good shape.
Nice. But, you know, on that note, though, you know, I think we still have a trump card, because if they do decide that we're no longer required, I don't know if you've seen Hot Tub Time Machine 2, but the cars have the option to take people out because they're bad people. So if the cars got to that, you know, it would be a thing where we'd have to remind them that without us, they would have no real purpose, because they are for transportation. So what about you, Justin? Would you want your car to go out and attack you?
Well, not really. I think I'd like it to attack other people.
I'm waiting
for Mad Max. That's what we want.
Yeah, but with Mad Max, who does all the welding for that? That's what I want to know.
Oh, there are so many questions about what's actually going on in the world of Mad Max.
Hey, yeah. Justin, you joined us late, so go ahead and briefly introduce yourself.
Sure, I'm Justin Warren. I run a consulting company based in Australia.
And okay, so you know what we're talking about, right? Whether the new Tesla is hot or not, what do you think?
Not as hot as the first one, but my feelings toward it are more complex than that. I think it's hot because it will bring mass scale adoption of electric vehicles. It is now proven, and the petrol. The internal combustion engine as a means of driving, of powering your car, is now old.
Yeah, I think so there's a consensus that you know, the electric car is, of course, an important thing going forward. I don't know if the new Tesla is going to be the thing to drive it. But any closing thoughts, guys?
I just thought there's a great place to park my Tesla Model 3 as I go across the Arctic on a cruise, now that passageway has opened up.
Oh, man.
That is deep.
Yeah. Nice.
Just as long as I can, you know what, just as long as the 15-inch monitor can keep the 8-year-old entertained on our short trip to the zoo, because we're not going much further than that in that range, well, I think it's a great idea.
Especially if you're in low power mode and can only go a few miles per hour. 15, to get
yeah,
there.
15 miles. Well, I guess that's the advantage of being in Chicago. You're not going to go faster than 15 miles.
We'll just call it Chicago traffic mode.
But if you think about the low power mode and trying to watch Bob the Builder, could you imagine that theme song in slow motion?
I'm just thinking, your car starts breaking down, gets on the fritz, first thing over the speaker, can we fix it?
Yes.
So I get it, somebody who has small children.
Totally. So yep. I gotta say, the future looks cool, but man, I'm a red-blooded American woman, and I need my fast car and my freedom, and it's still super nice to just jump in the car and go. And not have to worry about sitting around somewhere for hours.
And gas is $2.50 a gallon.
And not even where I am. I guess it depends on where you live. But
yeah.
Yeah, I have to say also, you know, the rental car company gave me an electric car once. And I was like, yeah, sure. because I figured the hotel had a charger since the rental car company was actually located in the hotel, but they did not. So,
wow.
After the first day, I was just screwed. I had to call it a tow truck.
Yeah, but did you pay for the tank of gas?
I always do.
Actually, this is how we could integrate our welt into it. We have a treadmill next to the car for emergency power supply. So our welt will tell us how it's going, integrates back in, and says how long you got left.
Yeah, and when it goes in low power mode, you know, the bottom part of the vehicle just opens up and you can Fred Flintstone that bad boy.
Now we're being practical.
Awesome.
Or you get some or they start coming in vans so you can stand up and it's like a standing desk with the treadmill.
See, it keeps getting hotter and hotter. The Model 3, I think it's going to be a hit.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for doing this with me, and appreciate all your input. I had a lot of fun with you guys, so thanks for joining, and we'll catch you later.